In other news.
To determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. In past shows, we've looked into medical breakthroughs that rid the human body of viruses and parasites, such as the work of Royal Rife. Rife determined the frequencies of viruses and built a device that would target these pathogens with their own frequency. The Rife method targets the virus or parasite with its own slightly amplified specific frequency, making it literally implode. His frequency device cured 14 out of 16 cancer patients. The famous 1931 dinner celebration titled The End to All Disease honored his work. It was attended by 30 of the nation's notable physicians. However, under the Flexner Report, no disease means no business. Rife's work was quickly ridiculed, his research stolen, and he was branded a charlatan. 20 years before Rife's celebratory dinner, the blueprint for modern medicine was already drafted and in place. It's known as the Flexner Report because in 1910, Abraham Flexner published the book-length report titled Medical Education in the United States and Canada. Flexner was not a doctor. He was a school teacher and educational theorist from Louisville, Kentucky. He was funded by several backers, including John D. Rockefeller of Standard Oil and Andrew Carnegie. The Flexner Report set the norms of modern medicine that emphasized laboratory research and the patenting of medicine. Flexner visited 155 medical schools in the United States and Canada, and his report recommended closing 120 based on their lack of standards and inability to adhere to the protocols of mainstream science. Today, the pharmaceutical industry, a select group of government agencies and corporations, continue as another byproduct of oil refinement. With this background, it's no surprise that parasites and fungus continue to plague the human condition. Their symptoms are the basis for a wide range of maladies and cravings. You may recall a past Zapper testimonial. It was stated that the average person holds approximately 2 pounds of parasites in their body, and in the worm category, they include tapeworms, hookworms, pinworms, ropeworms, blood and liver flukes, whipworms, and roundworms, just to name a few that are the easy ones to pronounce. There is also a long list in the protozoan category as well. Fungal infections and systematic candida are another category stemming from microorganism imbalance. When candida enters the bloodstream, the central nervous system, kidneys, liver, joints, eyes, and spleen are some of the areas that are affected. We look at the Native American and African American slave home remedy of pine gum spirits or turpentine as a treatment being used by the patients of our guest, Dr. Jennifer Daniels. Dr. Daniels was trained as an allopathic medical physician. After majoring in biology, she received her BA degree with honors. She entered the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine and received her medical degree and MBA concurrently at the end of 4 years. When Dr. Daniels mixed natural therapies with the standard practice of care, she caught the attention of hospital representatives. In one case, the medical board began investigating Dr. Daniels for reducing a patient's blood sugar in 1 week with diet and exercise. She was charged with failure to cooperate when she refused to reveal private records of patients not related to the complaint. After 3 years of legal actions and appeals, Dr. Daniels was placed on a 3-year probation. She was then given the choice of surrendering her medical license or having it revoked. She elected to surrender it. As a result of this surrender, she had been placed on the Do Not Employ list and the so-called terrorist watch list. Dr. Daniels is the author of the book, Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? She joins us today to talk about her work. Dr. Daniels, welcome to Another News.
Thank you.
Before we get into the work that you've done to share information on the use of turpentine and sugar to treat conditions such as candida, Would you please give listeners some background about yourself?
I'm a United States citizen. I went to medical school in the United States, became board certified in family practice, and had my own private practice for 10 years. During that time, I discovered that what I was taught in medical school was not effective and began looking for other methods of helping people heal and reversing diseases. And that's how I discovered turpentine.
And in your bio, you do talk about some of the problems that you encountered in the standard practice of care, and you mixed natural therapies. Can you tell listeners some of that?
So I opened my own private practice. When I got through with all my training, I returned to Syracuse, New York, purchased a city block, built a medical office building on it, and started practicing medicine. And so at the end of every year, I would do an audit, you know, how many people died, who died, what did they die of, was there anything that could have been done to give them a better outcome? In my first year of my second year of practice, I did such an audit, and there were only like 4 deaths, but still, every single person who died was fully diagnosed, they were on medications, they were taking their medications as directed, they were getting their annual exams, they'd even been to a specialist to double check to make sure they were on the proper medical regimen. And all of my patients who were non-compliant, didn't do what they were told, didn't take their drugs, they lived. And that was my first wake-up call that, oh my God, could it be that what I was taught in medical school is deadly, that that is what's killing people? That moved me to start giving people a choice between the standard of care, doing nothing, or making lifestyle changes and dietary changes. Personally, I had had a health crisis the year before I opened up my practice, and I'd become vegetarian and found that that really helped me feel tremendously better. I realized from my own personal experience that there are cases where modern medicine just didn't have any answers and where a simple dietary change could just be of great benefit.
Did that prompt you to treat your patients with diet and exercise?
Well, I gave them a choice. And so when I gave them a choice and I said, look, you can do this, 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 or this. And by the way, if you get any side effects from any medication I prescribe for you, stop taking it. And so just that one sentence dropped death rate down to 0 in my medical practice, and that's where it stayed.
You offering the choice, if you have any side effects from the pharmaceuticals that you prescribe for your patients, the death rate went to 0.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just want to clarify that. That's profound. So by doing that, you came up on the radar.
So this is in the 90s, and so the drug companies were trying to get access to data concerning what each doctor was prescribing so they could more effectively place their bribes, basically. They had managed to get a hold of that data, and the reason it takes you so long to check out at the pharmacy is the pharmacist is entering into the computer all of your personal data, the doctor's data, the drug, and how much was prescribed and how many refills. And so this data is tallied up with monthly totals and compared year to date. And this information is sold to drug companies and anyone who wants it. And so there was this drug rep who was very, very attentive to me. And she kept track of my children's birthdays. She bought them gifts. And so I always had a gift for my kid's birthday. I would come home with a gift because, of course, she'd done all my shopping for me. And we were really on good terms. And she worked for the company that made Imitrex, the headache injectable. And so one year, I had prescribed over $3,000 worth of Imitrex in 1 month. And so the next year, same month, I had prescribed 0. And so, because I wasn't aware of this situation, because I was giving out a sample of Imitrex and a prescription and dietary instructions with the instruction, try the diet first. If it does not work, get the prescription filled. And here's a sample, by the way. And so she comes to my office and she storms in really pouting, just with a very bad attitude, the drug rep. And I said, oh my goodness, this is just terrible. Well, come on in. Surely we can, you know, help cheer you up here. And so I said, well, what's up? And she said, there's something wrong. You prescribed $3,000 worth of my drug this month last year. And this year, nothing, 0. Something's going on. What's the matter? I said, well, nothing's wrong. Look, see, here's your place in the drug cabinet. get all your samples here. I give out your samples and a prescription, and there you go. He said, well, not a single prescription's been filled, which, of course, I didn't know because no one got back to me on it. But I guess the diet must have been working. And so I said, well, I'm certainly handing out the samples and telling people to get the medicine. And then she says, and you're not even prescribing my competitor's drug. Something's wrong. What's going on? I demand to know. I said, excuse me, I think it's time for you to leave. I can talk to you about your drug, but I'm certainly not going to talk to you about your competitor's drug. And so she left, but I was a little, you know, a little shaken up. You know, it's not every day you get a hostile, intimidating visit.
Indeed. And that's one case. But you were investigated here, and you were asked to reveal private records of patients not related to that. And,
correct.
And so you were dealing with a lot of legal action. This led to the surrendering of your medical license. Can you just briefly go over that for listeners so they get an idea of what you've gone through here?
Well, not only what I've gone through, really, but what their doctor is presently going through. So in other words, if their doctor stops prescribing drugs, they're going to get a hostile visit from the drug rep, just like I did. A hostile, demanding visit that could really ruin your day. And so the other thing that I got was I got a phone call from the hospital. And so, of course, my patients were doing very well. They weren't dying, but they didn't need to be hospitalized either because, well, they weren't getting sick. And so I got a call from my local hospital, and it was the executive secretary to the CEO. And she says, oh, Dr. Daniels, we are not seeing your patients at our hospital. And I want you to know we are prepared to give you goodies to win back your business. And I said, oh, my goodness, you're the only hospital I use. I'm sending all my patients to your hospital. You're my most favoritest hospital. And she said, oh. So she calls me to offer me a bribe, to send my patients to her hospital. And she calls it my business. I'm not the one going to the hospital. Poor patients are going to her hospital. But this is the way your doctor is treated, and this is the way you are treated. You are treated as a piece of business, your doctor's business. And your doctor is constantly getting hospital phone calls to pressure him to send you to one hospital over another. And so they offered me bribes, and I said, you don't have to bribe me. I think you have a great hospital. And you're the only hospital I'm sending patients to or even doing tests at. So, of course, I didn't need to do any x-rays because the patients were getting better. So I didn't need to do x-rays to diagnose conditions because the conditions were clearing up. And so hospitals have an incredible amount of business and revenue from the outpatient x-ray department. And so I went from basically sending them, you know, tens of thousands of dollars a year in x-ray business to nothing. And hospitalizing 15 patients a year to not even one. So this was worth a phone call because this was almost $100,000, easily $100,000 a year in revenue that hospital could potentially win back by making a phone call. And when they found out that my patients were not using any other hospital or getting any other tests, they were very unhappy and hung up the phone. Then I got a call from an insurance broker. This is a person who carries insurances, and he sells these insurances to businesses. And unbeknownst to me, I had a businessman in my practice who owned a chain of 30 McDonald's franchises. And his wife had come to as a patient, and she flashed her insurance card. Of course, we were not impressed because we knew her insurance company wasn't going to pay us. And so we said, well, Ms. Jones, that's really nice. We're really happy to see you're paying your insurance. That's good of you. But that'll be $65 today. And she said, what? What? And apparently she went home and told her husband she was not happy. And so he issued an edict that none of his McDonald's franchises could offer any insurance that did not pay Dr. Daniels in full. That basically led to insurance brokers calling me to say, hey, I can't feed my family. None of the insurances that I'm offering can be purchased. And so, you know, my income has dropped, can't feed my kids. And I said, look, I'm not signing these insurance agreements because the agreements have an embedded clause where I have to work for free without pay, taking care of their subscribers as long as the subscribers have paid the insurance premiums to the company. But that's again, the person's paid the company their insurance premium. The company has the option to say, Dr. Downs, we're not going to pay you. But I have to continue to see that person for a full year as long as they're current on their premiums with the company. And this is in New York state law. Other states are doing it too. And this is allowing companies to open up as insurance companies without having to have any reserves. So if they have a bad claim, let's say someone has an expensive illness, they have this clause. So now the doctor is providing the capital and the what's called reinsurance to cover that claim by working for free. So they can make up their mind, oh, we're going to stop paying all this patient's medical bills because it's going to adversely affect our cash flow, but we have a clause in our contract where everyone has to continue to provide care for this expensive patient for free.
That's incredible. You really have to check out insurance companies now.
Well, how can you check them out as a patient? You don't know. You're not a party to that agreement. You don't even get to see the clause. And the doctor signs at the bottom a non-disclosure agreement where he agrees not to share the details of that contract with you. But unfortunately, by not signing these contracts, I have another problem, which is that I'm getting menacing, threatening phone calls. And so then I get another phone call from a this time from the insurance company itself, not the CEO, I think it was the CFO, Chief Financial Officer. And the Dr. Daniels, you're messing up our business here. You have got to sign our contract because we're having problems because of you. We can't sell insurance. I told him about that little clause in his contract and that I was not in a position right now to provide credit to him. He told me he was going to send a courier to my office with that contract. He expected me to sign it. I said, well, I'm not going to be signing that contract. And he hung up on me right then and there. Click. And so, again, this is the kind of pressure your doctor can look forward to if he does anything to get you better. The purpose is not for me to have for people to pity me or, oh, my God, Dr. Daniels, you poor person. No. I don't have a problem because I'm not even in the country. You got the problem because you're seeing doctors who have signed these contracts who are abiding by these agreements, and that's what's totally influencing your care and damaging your health.
Okay, take us forward after you've been dealing with some of the legal action. Can you let listeners know what had happened afterward?
Well, first of all, the state starts investigating. I'm like, oh, my God, what could this be? Did I make a mistake? And so the case they pick is a case of a patient who walked into my office with symptoms of diabetes. I check him for diabetes. Blood sugar is 475, more or less. And so I, of course, give him the usual choices. He says, well, I'll use diet and exercise. In 1 week, without insulin or any other drugs, his blood sugar is down to 135. And the government says this is the inappropriate practice of medicine. Well, how can it be inappropriate to get better with therapy? And they said, okay, a pattern of medical misconduct. I said, well, how can it be a pattern? It's only one case. A pattern is at least three. Okay, I'm going to change the charge. And they kept changing. They finally settled upon a charge of non-cooperation and various hearings about that. They suspended my license forever and ever. Amen. I appealed it. I won the appeal. At the appeal, a judge said to the government, you know, what you've done here is illegal. Let me tell you how to legally take her license. This is a judge from the bench. And so the judge tells them how to legally take my license. They do that. I end up surrendering my license. And I say to them, well, look, you know, I don't have any use for this license. I've been practicing for a while now during all this litigation. So you promised me if I surrender this license that you won't ever contact me again? And they said, oh, yes, Dr. Daniel, scalp's on her. Don't worry about that. So I surrender the license, and I get put on one do not employ list, the Medicare do not employ list. Then I get put on the federal do not employ list. And so the Medicare do not employ list prohibits me from working for any institution that accepts Medicare funding, which means I cannot even work at a hospital as a janitor. Then the second do not employ list prohibits me from working for any government agency or for any private company that has the government as a customer. So it's a pretty global do not employ thing. And so then I said, okay, not the end of the world. A lot of folks live well without a license. I can do without a license. And the first do not employ thing, that's pretty narrow. I could get a different job. All right, so now I can't get a job. Maybe I can start a business. Let me get on a plane, go visit some buddies, see if we can put together something. And then I go to the airport only to find him on the terrorist list. And that's when I realized that I have a problem.
How did you get over that one?
I left the country. I said, that's it. I've been defeated. I've lost this one. I can't win this one.
All right. Dr. Daniels, I appreciate you going through that. I thought it was important for the listeners to get some context of what you've been through specifically. And you do point out that a lot of doctors are going through similar things. They have to adhere to this pressure. Some of them have to bend to that pressure.
No, it's not a lot. It's every single doctor. This is how you keep a license. Every single doctor is under this pressure and has to bow to it and cooperate with it in order to be licensed.
Got it. Let's switch gears for a minute, and I'd like to talk about how you came to learn about the history of using turpentine and sugar to treat health conditions.
Well, Jonathan, I was practicing medicine, and I had given up on the stuff I learned in medical school. It just was not working. And I could not, in good conscience, accept people's money, for something that just wasn't working for anyone. I could see having a failure rate, maybe a 10% failure rate, but we're looking at a 0% success rate. And so I said, there's got to be something out there. And then even when I use diet, supplements, teas, enemas, cleansing to get people better, they would get better, but they were only temporarily better. By that I mean they were only better as long as they adhered to a very strict diet. And so the least little deviation, boom, they were on their back again. And so I said, there's got to be something. There's got to be something that will restore a person to their pre-illness state. So I started looking for that, whatever that was. And then I was homeschooling my kids, and I also got a lot of junk mail in the mail. From a kid, it's always my habit to read my junk mail. So between homeschooling the kids and reading my junk mail, I found out that African Americans, when they were slaves, had some kind of medicine that was very, very strong. It was stronger than the American Indian medicine. It was stronger than the rural American medicine. It was stronger than the European doctors. It was the strongest medicine at the time in the United States. In fact, it was so strong that when the slave owners became ill and their European doctor told them, this is it, you're going to die, make up your will, pass out your goodies, decide who you want to have what, it's over, then the slave master would go to the slave quarters and say, hey, I'll give you whatever you want. Just get me better. And reliably, they would get the slave master better. I don't know what they asked for, but they got it. And so I said, oh, my goodness, there is something out there. And if a slave has access to it, ready access, it must be extremely inexpensive. And the slaves don't have access to refrigeration and all this other stuff, so it must be something that's easily accessible, easily kept, and very cheap. I thought about that, and then I read other accounts about other countries where they spent tremendously less money on healthcare than the United States was spending, and people were living longer. And so I said, whatever the cure is, whatever the answer is that can restore people's health to pre-illness levels, I know that it's inexpensive. And so I calculated that whatever this thing was, it must have cost less than a penny back in, say, 1850. So I just kept looking and looking and looking. I was buying health books and stuff. Finally, I said, wait a minute. I have people in my medical practice who are descended from slaves. They might know. And so at the end of every office visit, I would say, hey, was there something your mother or grandmother used that cured everything and was very inexpensive? What could it be? At first, it was like, oh, no, doc, sorry, can't help you. And then finally, people started saying, oh, my goodness, must be turpentine and sugar. Oh, my God, that turpentine and sugar. And they would tell stories about how grandma would come running with that turpentine and sugar whenever anybody was sick. So you didn't want to be sick because you knew you were getting turpentine and sugar. And so I said, oh, my God, that sounds like it might be it. Well, I would ask him, how much turpentine? How much sugar? I was like, oh, I don't know. Oh, I don't know. And I said, well, what about your grandmother? I guess she's deceased now. No, she's alive. Well, she must be in a nursing home. Nope, she lives in her own house, does her own laundry, cleans her own house and everything, makes her own food. I said, really? Well, how old is she? This guy was like 45 years old, so, you know, grandmother, my God, she's no young lady.
Right.
So he says, well, I'm about 92. I said, well, that's amazing. I said, well, you think she talked to me about it? He says, well, you know, she sticks to herself pretty much these days. I was like, well, where's the dead end for you? I said, well, I'm going to have to find out myself. And I went down to the hardware store, got a can of turpentine, went down to the grocery store, got some sugar cubes, and went home, put them on the kitchen table and said, well, I'm going to sort this out. Either I'm going to drop dead or find out something.
I can't believe you did this, but you used yourself as a guinea pig for humanity here.
Well, then, of course, I had to, wait, I might die. I might not make this, right? So then I had to check, go find my will, put it on the kitchen, on the refrigerator so everybody could find it in case, you know, things didn't work out. And then I had to wait another day because I had to tell my receptionist that if I don't come to work, don't worry about it, just reschedule the patients. And so everything in order, had the will in order, reception set her orders, I had a turpentine sugar, so I was ready to get started. So I started with one sugar cube and a drop of turpentine. I took it, fully expecting to pass out on the floor, and nothing happened. I said, oh, well, So I got bolder and kept increasing the dose, increasing the dose, increasing the dose. And the whole story is in my Candida Cleaner report, which is available for free on my website at vitalitycapsulesplural.com.
Okay.
And so it's really important. I mean, I can tell you the story, but people really should read the report first. And in fact, read it twice before attempting this.
Absolutely, yes. So do you want to give that URL out again and the name of the report?
The name of the report is The Candida Cleaner, and the URL is vitalitycapsulesplural.com.
Okay.
And I get all kinds of emails from people, oh, you told me this, you told me that. No, I didn't. I didn't talk to you. Read the report. So people listen to me on the radio, go try something, and of course, you're not going to get it right because it's not like you grew up at your grandmother's knee with her showing you step-by-step everything to do. And so, you know, read the report, read it a couple of times. I tell you everything that can go wrong and how to avoid it to make sure you have a smooth, easy experience, and it's free. So just get the report.
Okay, you were able to determine the proper dose.
Right.
Tell us about that part.
Well, so I didn't die with the couple of drops. And then I just kept increasing the drops and increasing the number of sugar cubes and finally arrived at the dose of 1 teaspoon of turpentine with more or less 1.5 teaspoons of sugar. And you just wash that down once every 3 days. The way I did that was I finally arrived at the dose that gave me results. And it's tough to say results because, of course, I was fine. I didn't have any illnesses. But when I reached that dose, my mind cleared. I had all this energy, and it was amazing. It was like I was, you know, like 10 years old again. And I said, wow, this is amazing. And then in order to determine how frequently to take it, I had to say, okay, let me wait and see how long it takes this amazing feeling to go away. It took about 4 days. And then I took another dose, and boom, that amazing feeling came right back. I said, oh my God, this is it. I think I found it. And then I started I had my sister-in-law take it, and she had similar results, and she had aches and pains, and so her aches and pains went away. Then I had my mother take it. My mother had chronic pain from a car accident just for decades, and that pain went away. I said, wow, this is amazing. And then I started recommending it for my patients who had severe incurable diseases like lupus or rheumatoid arthritis. They cleared up. And so I said, wow, this is amazing. And it was very difficult to get people to use it because people felt that turpentine was deadly. The government, of course, had a disinformation campaign going on for decades. I remember when I was a child, 50 years ago actually, the government would say, get turpentine out of your home, it'll poison your children, they'll drink it by accident and die. This stuff tastes so awful, no one's drinking it by accident. That's nonsense.
Right.
People remember the disinformation campaign, and then because children were sent to public school, they didn't have the contact with their grandparents, and so they didn't have the exposure of knowing that you could take turpentine and it was perfectly fine, and people were in excellent, had excellent, outstanding results from taking it. So since people had no personal experience with turpentine due to their separation from their family due to compulsory schooling, they had no other information source, and they had the government disinformation source, there's a tremendous amount of resistance.
I can imagine. You talk about turpentine, or pure gum spirits, known to be a natural enemy to parasites and candida. Could you expound a little more on that?
Well, so most people think of turpentine as paint thinner. There are lots and lots of paint thinners. Not all paint thinners are turpentine. So the turpentine is something called pure gum spirits of turpentine. Pure means 100%, nothing but. Gum means from the resin of the pine tree. Spirits means it's distilled. So it's distilled into a vapor and then condensed. So pure gum spirits. The gum part refers to the pine tree. Spirits part refers to distilled. And pure means 100%. Some turpentine is wood turpentine. It's made from boiled wood chips. That's not the turpentine I'm talking about because it's not from the resin or from the gum. You want pure gum spirits of turpentine. It's a very high quality turpentine. So most people don't understand or know that the medicinal turpentine is from the pine tree exclusively. And so this piece of ignorance, you know, causes a lot of misunderstanding.
Could you explain how it is that the natural enemy of parasites? I thought that was interesting how there is an actual movement right when you begin to ingest the pure gum spirits.
Yeah. So we're taught about this whole science thing like alpha receptors and beta receptors and calcium channel blockers, and that's really just a bunch of nonsense. What's going on out there really is you have actual living organisms interacting with other actual living organisms. For example, you'll have the spider who makes a web to trap the bug, and it's not about this receptor interacting with that receptor. It's a matter of each organism has a strategy for survival. And it's the same thing going on in your body with your body and with parasites. And so it turns out that the pine tree has a resin, which is referred to as the gum, and this resin repels bugs so they don't eat up the pine tree. And it also repairs any wounds the pine tree has from bugs that might have got a head start. And so it turns out then that these parasites, whether they're worms or bugs or viruses or bacteria, have a natural recognition of turpentine and awareness of it. And as soon as they become aware of it, they're like, oh my God, I got to get out of here. I got to leave. I'm in the wrong place. Made a mistake. Sorry. Out of here. And they literally pack up their bags and look for the nearest exit. And so it's up to you to decide what the nearest exit is and the easiest exit. And so because you're listening to the show, we can guess you live in the United States somewhere, and we can guess that you probably sit in chairs a lot, and a few other things we can guess about you. Maybe you haven't had turpentine in the past 10 or 20 years. So because of all these things, your body does not have an easy exit prepared. And so what I talk about in the report is having frequent bowel movements so any parasite that wants to leave knows that the action is in the intestines, and it's going to make a beeline for the intestines to leave and go to the toilet. If you don't do that, then the parasites will try and take a shortcut and leave through your skin and give you a rash, leave through your lungs and give you a cough, leave through your brain and give you a headache. So you want to have a prepared exit that's quick and easy for the parasites, and that's why you have to have several bowel movements a day. And that's also why I created the Vitality Capsules, because I was having difficulty getting people better because they were not having enough bowel movements. And finally, one patient said to me, you know what, Doc? You make a capsule that'll make me poop, and I'll take it. And so I said, okay. And I set to work, and I made a capsule, and sure enough, he bought it, and a lot of other people did, too.
Is it all natural ingredients in that capsule?
Nothing but herbs, just herbs, you know. Garlic, aloe, cascara sagrada, nothing but herbs. Ginger, aloe. And I even made them take out all the additives. So whenever you go to make a supplement, The supplement manufacturer has this a list of additives they just throw in, and I don't even know why they just throw these things in. So there is no magnesium citrate, no other additives of any kind. There's regular and there's extra strength, and the ingredients for the regular are garlic, ginger, aloe, senna, cascara sagrada, barberry, clove, and turmeric.
Great work that you're doing in helping people. I realize the topic of parasite infestation isn't very pleasant, but it's not often connected with food cravings and other negative health conditions. Can you talk about how parasites and candida stimulate food cravings and other cravings in the body?
Yes, these parasites speak your language, and it's not English or Spanish or French. Your language is a language of neurotransmitters that literally are manufactured and released and give you feelings. And these feelings are so real and so strong, you are convinced that they are yours, and they're not. So these parasites have the ability to make the very same neurotransmitters that your body uses and manufactures to communicate with itself. Literally, these parasites can make you angry. They can make you feel tired. They can make you crave certain foods. They can wake you up in the middle of the night and make you go to the store to get something. It is amazing. But once you realize that, whoa, that's not me, that's the parasite socket, then it's much easier for you to ignore these impulses, number one. Number two, you can understand that when you cleanse, when you have more bowel movements, when you expel these parasites, and you just start feeling differently. I just a patient who was very, very disagreeable, short-tempered, pessimistic. She came to me complaining about her husband. I said, well, why don't you do this? You know, take these vitality capsules, increase your bowel movements, eat some more vegetables, and take a B-complex vitamin. And I'll see you back in about a week. Actually, I gave her 2 weeks. And she came back, and she was smiley and happy and laughing. And she said, Doc, I was just full of shit at the time. How come you didn't tell me? And so that is the truth of the matter, is that these parasites literally can control your very personality. And people who are negative and envious and angry all the time often is simply parasites. And once they address their parasites, they become very reasonable, pleasant people.
This is very interesting. I don't think enough people realize what's going on here. This seems to be the bedrock of a lot of problems with health and society. And there seems to be a spiritual context in here as well. Do some of the cravings include alcohol?
My experience is that alcohol cravings, that's usually a malnutrition. So it's a B vitamin deficiency. And if you fix that, then the person just loses interest in alcohol.
I gotcha. Okay.
So alcohol is basically a disease of malnutrition or alcoholism.
There isn't a parasite connection there, is there?
I don't think so. Not in my experience. So my experience, I've been able to relieve people of their alcohol problems just with B vitamins and hydration.
A lot of people don't understand what candida is. Can you explain to listeners what that is and why it's important to understand the big picture here and how it gets in our blood?
Okay, so everyone's born with candida. Human beings have candida. That's normal. Your body is created complete. So your body is created with the ability to repair itself and maintain itself. And your body is also created with the ability to digest itself once you die. And so the candida is there to eat and digest dead cells in your body. So the candida is a secondary reaction to something else. It doesn't show up by itself. So for example, when you eat white sugar, which is basically dead food, the candida shows up to devour the dead food. When you take chemotherapy or an antibiotic that kills your cells, candida showed up to eat those dead cells. And you have enough dead cells, of course, the candida thrives. It has babies and it goes on and on to spread and spread. And then you see it either as a skin rash or as achy, painful joints or as a vaginal discharge. It itches, all kinds of ways that you see candida. But the candida is what nature has packaged in your body to digest your dead cells at death and return you to the soil.
Okay, then can you explain how the sugar and turpentine work with the candida?
So the turpentine, as I said, all of the parasites have a natural aversion to it. And so the sugar acts as a vehicle to transport the turpentine, and the candida and other parasites cannot resist the sugar. And so they go to the sugar, the turpentine touches them, and boom, they are basically deactivated. So turpentine is not a parasite killer. It deactivates the parasites. It gets the parasites to shut down all their metabolic activity. They stop reproducing. They stop creating toxins. And turpentine also has the ability to repair damaged tissue, which is an amazing thing. And this is why when you take turpentine, many people experience improvement or feeling of improvement immediately, like within seconds. And that's because the turpentine repairs the tissues and shuts down all the toxic activity of the parasites.
Yes, I thought it was very interesting how candida reacts, and I'm not sure if it's only candida or other funguses and parasites, but
it's others, yes, other funguses, bacteria, viruses, worms. It's really broad spectrum.
They stop their reproduction cycle and they go into another phase to get out.
Correct.
Dr. Daniels, do we all have parasites in our bodies? Are there different types?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Different types, different amounts, and different locations. And so if one person has arthritis, another one has asthma, that means one person's parasites are located in their joints and the other person's parasites are located in their lungs. That is the difference. There usually is not a difference in terms of the actual causative agent.
This is getting really interesting in terms of how this realm of parasites and fungal infestations in the body are the underlying cause of a lot of problems and illness. And it's mm-hmm. often ignored or the symptoms are treated only. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's misrepresented in medical school. In medical school, I was given express instructions not to look for parasites. Do not look for parasites. This is the United States. We are a first world country. There are no parasites. Do not look for parasites. That was the lesson.
It sounds like something from the Flexner Report. Are parasites also excreting their waste inside our bodies? And what effect does that have?
Well, yes, they are excreting their waste inside our bodies. The effect that that has, you know, I think it's debatable. I mean, I don't think it's good. I think that's the cause of arthritis, is these parasites living, dumping their waste in people's joints and literally eating the joints, eating people alive. So these parasites are literally eating you while you're alive. And that's in large part the cause of a lot of the misery that people have. In the old days, they had this expression, what's eating you? And it was the recognition that if you're upset, you've got parasites that are literally nibbling at you.
When successfully doing the turpentine sugar protocol, I've heard that sometimes the parasites migrate around the body and they could be worms and things like that. Is that could you talk about that scenario?
That's when you're unsuccessfully doing it. That's when you're not having enough bowel movements. And that's when your turpentine dose is too high. So turpentine dose is too high, then the parasites are going to migrate around your body, not out of your body. And you haven't prepared an adequate exit commensurate with your turpentine dose. So you have a mismatch between how much turpentine you're taking and how many bowel movements you're having. And that's when you get the migration. And you don't want the migration. And the migration, I think, is a failure of your turpentine dosage. You've got it wrong.
This is all in the Candida Cleaner report that Dr.
Correct.
Daniels has prepared. It's online. You can read that for free. And can mm-hmm. you give that website out one more time, Dr. Daniels?
VitalityCapsules.com.
Okay.
And the name of the report is the Candida Cleaner.
And in that report also, there's a full plan to discuss the ways to prepare the exit for parasites and how to do this
Correct.
Properly.
Right.
Can you talk about some of the symptoms and maladies that occur from having the parasites in the body?
They're really anything and everything. Depression, anxiety, insomnia, arthritis, diabetes, thyroid conditions, adrenal problems, fatigue. Really, it's just endless. Asthma, headaches.
Okay, and what often is the case is the patient will go to a doctor and they will treat the symptom, or they'll get close to maybe the source, but not, they won't address.
No, they will not treat the parasites. They will not attempt to diagnose the parasites or even treat the parasites. When your doctor went to medical school, he's under direct orders not to look for parasites. And if he finds them, for Christ's sake, don't treat them. Don't treat them effectively. Here, we've got some prescription stuff for you. Try this. Take this. Take this antifungal, that antifungal. Oh, yeah, of course, it'll destroy your liver and kill you, but don't worry about that.
Did you speak about this turpentine sugar protocol in your book, Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful?
No.
Tell listeners about that book.
So I was in the midst of fleeing the United States, and I said to myself, you know what, I don't know how this is going to turn out. I might not live, something might happen, I don't know. I want to write a book to leave behind the knowledge that I have about natural healing, so people will know when they can read it. But I can't call it a health book because then it might be censured. So I'll call it a beauty book. And so that's how my idea for the book came about. And then I had a co-author who I met when I was volunteering at a fasting center. And I gave a lecture in the fasting center about how to look 20 years younger. And literally, people did what I said, and they were looking like 5 years younger just in 5 minutes after doing the simple facial that I recommended. And so one of the people there said, oh, my God, this has got to be a book. And so together we wrote the book. And, of course, no, we're not putting turpentine in the book. So I've been on a lot of radio shows in the 90s, and they said, Dr. Dan, you can't mention turpentine and don't mention enemas. So I generally get censured when I appear on radio shows. They always tell me in advance what I cannot talk about. So the book was written really as a health book, but also to help people look 20 years younger. Because when I was in practice in the 90s, women would come to me with, various complaints, and they would do what I told them to do, and they would look 20 years younger. They're like, oh, my God, this is great. Now I can go back to my high school reunion. And so literally, people were not going back to their high school reunion because they felt they looked too old and too ugly. And they would follow these instructions, simple instructions, and they would look and feel 20 years younger.
Amazing. Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful is the title of that book. Let's.
And that's available at the same website, vitalitycapsules.com.
Dr. Daniels, I'm interested in your opinion of the state of the medical industry right now in the United States. Now that you're out of the country and you've been out of the country for a number of years, how do you see this country more objectively now?
Well, first of all, the state of medicine in the United States has not changed, I'd say, in the past 100 years. There's really been no change. And what changes or fluctuates is people's awareness of what's going on. So in other words, they knew that all of the medications put out by pharmaceutical companies were deadly and dangerous. And so the government had to create the FDA to give false assurance that the medicine was safe when it was not. And so my grandparents, they all said, hey, you can't go to a hospital, it's a death house. They'd kill you there. So this awareness was always, it was always understood. The only thing that's changed, I would say, in the past 50 years is the public awareness has changed. And so because of the public education system separating children from their parents and grandparents, this piece of information was lost. It was not transmitted to the kids. So that's the only thing that's changed is the level of awareness. So the system of medical care has always been deadly. It's always been dangerous. It's always been safer to not get care than to get care. But, as far as health care, it's not healthy and nobody cares. I mean, that's the joke. And so you've heard the expression, oh, the cure is worse than the disease. Well, where do you think that came from? It came from the longstanding knowledge that our present medical system is simply dangerous.
If some of the listeners may not be familiar with document that's known as the Flexner Report, why is that important to understand?
It's critical. So when I entered medical school in 1979, the first semester, in fact, really the first month, they called all the medical students into the auditorium and said, we must tell you about the Flexner Report. Without the Flexner Report, this medical school would not exist. You would not have a profession. You know, modern medicine would not even exist. This report created modern medicine. And that's what we were told. And so, of course, you ask yourself, well, how so? And says, well, this Mr. Flexner went all around the United States and found all the locations where healing was being done without using pharmaceuticals. And thank goodness the government shut all those things down, because those were all quacks and unauthorized. And now, the only way you have a job is because your job is to prescribe pharmaceuticals that are approved by the FDA. And only with the Flexner Report, which was used by government enforcement agencies to shut down all healing that did not use pharmaceuticals, was this monopoly created for you so that you could have this great profession and have and make an honorable living.
It is quite amazing. To dig a little bit, I stumbled across this when I was looking at the instruction booklet of a device called the EM Pulsar that sends out these pulses of sine waves to heal tissue. And they were talking about the Flexner Report, and I asked you prior to this interview, and yes, you knew right away what that was. Yeah, unfortunately, that's the reality we're living in. Dr. Daniels, I really appreciate you being on the show to discuss your breakthroughs and the real humanitarian work that you're sharing with your patients and listeners. And again, your website is vitalitycapsules.com, and the report is called the Candida Cleaner. Listeners, if you're interested in this protocol, you must read thoroughly that report in order to understand how to use the turpentine and sugar method. And it's got to be pure gum spirits, as Dr. Daniels had described. Dr. Daniels, thank you so much for being on In Other News.
Oh, you're welcome.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.
Gonna make a whole lot of money. gonna be big, yeah. Gonna be big, yeah. I'm gonna buy this town. Gonna buy this town. And put it all in my shoe. Might even give a piece to you. Do that.